Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're getting into the really strategic side of creative media. We're talking research.
That's right. Because if you're launching anything creative, maybe an ad campaign, a new show, you know, a big product,
you can't just rely on a gut feeling, can you?
Absolutely not. The stakes are way too high. We're talking potentially millions, sometimes even billions. Precision is everything.
So today we're drilling down into audience research specifically. Our mission really is to understand the basics, primary versus secondary research. What's the difference?
And then crucially, how businesses use what they find, you know, how they segment that audience to make sure their product, their ads, their budget
hit the exact right target, the bullseye.
Precisely.
Now, you might know these terms, primary, secondary. But we want to go a bit deeper than just definitions.
Yeah, look at the strategic value. Like, why does one cost so much more? What edge does it actually give you?
It really starts with that fundamental split, doesn't it? Knowledge you find out yourself versus, well, someone else's take on it.
Mm-hmm. And that difference, it's not just academic. It really dictates how useful the information is and, like you said, the competitive advantage.
In the creative world, the kind of research you do basically decides if you're just, you know, following trends or actually setting them.
Well put.
Okay, let's start with the first type. The stuff you generate yourself. Primary research.
Right. This is proprietary data. Information you collect for your specific, immediate project.
It's raw. It can be expensive, definitely. But it's valuable because, well, your competitors can't just go in and buy it, can they?
Exactly. We define primary research as data collected directly by the company, firsthand.
It's unfiltered insight. You're asking the questions, recording the answers. You control the whole context.
Totally. And the ways you gather this, they range quite a bit.
You've got things like online surveys your team designs and sends out, or maybe those intercept surveys you see sometimes, like in a shop.
Yep. And then there are the more, let's say, high-touch methods. Face-to-face interviews are a big one.
Focus groups, too.
Focus groups, absolutely. Invaluable. Yeah. Because they don't just give you a number, like 7 out of 10 for X.
No, they give you the why.
Exactly.
The why.
You can see reactions, hear the hesitation, catch that spark of excitement. All of that feeds directly into designing the actual media product.
So if I'm launching, say, a new streaming service, I might use a focus group to look at logo ideas or a questionnaire to figure out pricing.
Perfect examples. You get a direct, current read on your potential users, what they think right now.
That makes sense.
Now, there's a slight nuance here in our sources. Sometimes primary sources aren't just about surveys or interviews.
Oh.
Yeah. Think about like a documentary filmmaker or someone doing historical research for a film.
Okay.
For them, the primary sources are the original things, like original photos from the time or news footage from the day an event happened.
Or firsthand accounts like diaries or transcripts.
Exactly. Firsthand accounts. In that context, it's still about the unedited direct source. That's the key thing.
Got it. So whether it's an old photo or a new survey result, the common thread is that it's direct, unanalyzed information.
Right. But there's a challenge, isn't there? Raw data like that. It can be messy.
Yeah. And sometimes the sample size isn't huge, especially with things like focus groups.
Precisely. Yeah. You might spend, I don't know, $100,000 a month on primary research, and the results could still be a bit unclear, ambiguous.
Which is why you can't just ignore the bigger picture.
Exactly. And that brings us neatly to secondary research.
The other side of the coin.
Right. So when we talk secondary research, we're now looking at sources that contain secondhand information.
Meaning data that someone else already gathered.
Yeah.
And maybe analyzed.
That's the crucial distinction. Secondary sources involve interpretation or analysis of original information. Someone else has already processed it.
Okay, so give me some examples. Where do we find this stuff?
Well, classic examples are things like academic books and journals. They inherently involve someone commenting on, reviewing, or synthesizing original data or ideas.
Makes sense. And in the creative media space?
Oh, it's everywhere. Think industry reports you find online on specific trade websites.
Mm.
Market trend data that's been aggregated.
Analysis in magazines, newspapers. Even TV news reports, right? They're taking events or data and framing it?
Exactly. They're filtering, interpreting, presenting. That's secondary information.
And the big advantage here is what? Cost. Speed.
Both, really.
Yeah.
Compared to primary research, it's often much cheaper or even free, and it's available immediately. You get instant access to huge data sets, market trends, historical context.
So if I'm making, say, a horror film, I could quickly find data on how similar films performed over the last few years.
Precisely. average box office, typical audience demographics for that genre, all without having to survey thousands of moviegoers yourself. It saves enormous time and money.
Okay.
But here's the thing. Neither primary nor secondary is enough on its own. You really need both.
How so?
Well, think of it like this. Secondary research gives you the big map, the general landscape, the market climate. It tells you what's generally happening.
Right, the established context.
Exactly. But primary research, that tells you specifically about your spot on the map, how people react to your unique product, your specific idea, right now.
Ah, okay. So secondary for the broad understanding, primary for the specifics of my project.
You got it. A good strategy needs both. You balance that broad market knowledge with those very specific proprietary insights about your own potential customers.
Okay, so understanding the whole market, that's step one, using primary and secondary. But like you said, just blasting an ad out to everyone, that's just burning money.
Total waste. Economic suicide, as you put it earlier.
So step two is figuring out who in that huge market actually matters for your specific thing. And this is where we get into the target audience, right?
Bingo. The target audience. Okay. That particular group or groups of people that your product is really aimed at.
And companies use all that research we just talked about, primary, secondary, to pin down exactly who is most likely to be interested.
It's about focus. Laser focus.
And this is where it gets really interesting, I think, how companies actually do that focusing. Through segmentation.
Yes, segmentation. It's not enough to aim for, say, people age 30. That's way too broad.
Right. You need to slice it much finer, like 30-year-old high earners in big cities who like hiking and follow specific environmental accounts online. That level of detail.
Exactly. You're breaking the audience down into these really defined, actionable categories.
Why is that so crucial?
Well, it's about efficiency, maximizing your impact. Every dollar you spend, whether it's on making the ad or placing the ad, needs to count. If you skip segmentation.
You're just guessing, like trying to sell, I don't know, wrinkle cream to teenagers.
Perfect analogy. Complete mismatch. So, segmentation lets you avoid that.
So what are the main ways companies slice up the audience? What categories do they use?
Our sources lay out the common ones. You start with the basics, the demographics, age and gender are usually the first cut. Obvious life stage stuff.
Okay, easy enough.
Then you often look at economic factors, occupation and income. That tells you a lot about purchasing power, lifestyle.
And probably what kind of media they consume too.
Absolutely. And education level often correlates with tastes, preferences for certain types of content.
Right, those feel like the sort of static categories, things you might fill in on a form.
They are. But then you get into the more dynamic factors. Location is huge. Not just country or city, but sometimes even neighborhood. It affects culture, relevance.
And definitely how people use digital platforms, right? Local targeting is massive online.
Hugely important. But the real gold mine, especially now, it's the psychographics.
Okay, what falls under that?
Interests and lifestyle. This is about how people think. What do they value? What motivates them? What do they actually do in their spare time?
So it's not just knowing someone is, say, 45 years old.
No. It's knowing that this particular 45-year-old feels nostalgic about 80s rock music, but also secretly binges cooking shows on weekends. It's much deeper.
That level of detail seems almost scary sometimes.
It can feel that way, but from a business perspective, understanding those motivations is incredibly powerful. And the point of all this detailed slicing and dicing.
Yeah, what's the ultimate goal?
It's not just for targeting ads, though that's a big part.
Yeah.
It actually shapes the product itself, the production.
How so?
Well, if you know exactly who you're talking to, you can design the product, the message, the whole experience for them. It allows the product to focus effectively.
So if my target audience is, let's say, high-income retirees.
Right, then you're probably not designing your marketing campaign for TikTok, are you?
No, definitely not. Maybe more like high-end magazines, specific news sites, maybe certain TV channels.
Exactly. And the style of the advertising would be different too. The tone of voice, the visuals, everything reflects that target segment.
So this research directly impacts the creative choices, the actual design and production.
Absolutely. From day one.
Let's think about a practical example. The script mentions an expensive restaurant in a wealthy area.
Okay. Yeah. Good one.
The segmentation there is clearly based heavily on income, probably location too, affluent locals.
Right.
So how does that influence the creative?
Well, everything has to align with that segment's expectations. The menus need to be refined, sophisticated, the decor, the service.
And the advertising.
The advertising needs to be elegant. High quality photos maybe, subtle messaging. a tone that speaks to exclusivity and quality, not loud discounts or promotions.
Yeah, you wouldn't run a buy one, get one free ad for a Michelin-starred place.
Exactly. It wouldn't resonate. It might even damage the brand perception for that target audience.
So the segmentation dictates the entire creative approach.
It really does. And you see this even more clearly when a campaign tries to reach multiple different segments.
Okay. Like when they make different versions of the same ad.
Precisely. The core message might be the same, but they tweak the execution to resonate with each specific group.
The script has that hold my hand theme example, a travel campaign, right?
Yeah, that's a great illustration. A major campaign. The overall goal was the same for everyone. Inspire travel, show magical holiday moments.
And the method was consistent too. Uplifting music, lots of energy, showing great experiences.
Correct. That was the core creative.
Yeah.
But they didn't just make one ad.
They knew different people find different things magical, I guess.
Exactly. So they created tailored versions for different segments. They recognized that what pulls at the heartstrings of a family is different from what excites a young couple or an older one.
Okay, so walk me through the versions.
Right. So first there was one aimed squarely at families and the key visual, a young boy holding his parents' hand.
Ah, okay. Very evocative.
Totally. It taps into feelings of security, warmth, making memories with your kids.
Mm-hmm.
That version probably ran on family-friendly TV or streaming platforms.
Makes sense. What else?
Then they targeted couples, but they split that segment. There was a younger couples version.
What did that look like?
It showed a young man and woman, maybe in their 20s or 30s. The focus was more on high-energy, exciting experiences. Think scuba diving, maybe exploring a vibrant city, something adventurous.
So hitting that segment's desire for novelty, activity, maybe Instagrammable moments.
You got it. Adventure, shared experiences, that kind of vibe.
And the third version.
That was for couples too, but clearly an older man and woman, maybe 50s, 60s plus.
And the feeling there would be different again.
Completely. The experiences shown might focus more on comfort, relaxation, luxury, perhaps. Maybe revisiting classic places rather than extreme adventures. It reflects different priorities, different interests, probably different income levels and lifestyles, too.
Wow. So the same core theme, hold my hand, but visually and emotionally tailored.
Precisely. It shows how the research, knowing those different segments exist and what motivates them, directly leads to different creative products, different ads.
To make sure that when a family sees it, they connect with the family vibe. And when a young couple sees it, they connect with the adventure vibe.
Exactly. Maximizing relevance, maximizing connection. It's smart production driven by smart research.
It really ties it all together, doesn't it?
It does. It underscores why thorough audience research, using both that specific primary data and the broader secondary context, is just so critical.
It's not just background info. It actively shapes the creative content, the design choices, even where you choose to show it.
And ultimately, that leads to a much, much higher chance of the whole thing being successful.
So the takeaway for you listening is, next time you see an advertisement, whether it feels like it's aimed at someone retired or a young professional or maybe families like yours, remember, it's not random.
Not at all.
It's a carefully crafted piece of communication built on research, designed very intentionally to connect with your specific segment based on things like your age, your interests, where you live.
Precisely. Which leads us to a final thought. Building on those segmentation categories, we talked about age, gender, location, income, and those psychographics like interests and lifestyle.
Yeah.
Here's something to ponder. In today's world of super personalized digital ads, which one of those categories do you think has become the most powerful driver when a company decides how much to bid to show you an ad?
Interesting question. Which factor most influences the cost of reaching someone?
Yeah. Exactly. And why would knowing that specific detail about you make placing an ad more or less expensive for the advertiser? What level of buying intent might it reveal? Something to think about.
Definitely something to chew on. Happy deep diving.